Every leader has problems. Increasing your leadership intensity won't fix them in a healthy way. You need an increase of clarity. From starting businesses, leading multiple nonprofit organizations, both large and small, and a full family life, Dr. Chris McAllister learned how to shift his thinking to thrive. He will help you order your internal world so you can lead your external world. Welcome to the Site Shift Lead Podcast with Chris McAllister.
Site Shift Lead Podcast number 2, and you're here, and I'm so glad you're here. I get into this and I'm talking with you to share things about how we can stay connected. And so we're making some changes at chrismcallister.com. That's chrismcallister.com, one of each letter. And that's a way that you can stay up to speed with what's happening with Site Shift Lead and different ways we can connect and events. But we're reworking the site, so you may be checking it out in the midst of that. Who knows? But that is a way, of course, social media, all the kind of stuff that we can do there to help just connect you to the story of what you're living out. And so if you missed the first one, go back and check it out, because I'm teaching you how to reframe everything. Now, as we get into reframing everything and making sense of our story as leaders, we want to learn what it means to pay attention to what's happening on the inside. You cannot order your external world until you learn to order your internal world. You can't lead your external world well until you order your internal world. I want to teach you how to do that. You know, the first one, I'm teaching you how to reframe things, identity, mission, community. This is how you get into downshifting into first gear and living out of identity. To make this point, I need to tell you a story from a crazy situation in my life. I had not been exercising regularly for a number of years. I've been focused on finishing a dissertation and a nonprofit turnaround, starting a couple businesses, and sadly, and to my own fault, I let that slip. So I'm signed up for a Tough Mudder with some guys. Now, I was doing some things, some kettlebell workouts to try to keep fit, but no real deep, intense cardio work. And if you're familiar with Tough Mudder, you know, it could be 10 miles, 12 miles, all these obstacle courses. It's an insane event. And I needed to start training for it. So I start running. The only time I had in my schedule at that point was to run at night. And I needed some extra motivation to help me run at night. About the same time, I had discovered this show that some of the college students that I teach were talking about called Walking Dead. And I was kind of intrigued by this show, and I started watching some of it. And that zombie narrative got in my brain. So I'm running, and I found an app where you could run missions and run from zombies. Trippy, crazy. So you're doing it at night, right? And the way it works is you'd pick a playlist to go with the mission. So music would be playing, and the narrative would pop in and out of some of the music playing. And the zombies would come in, and they would start chasing you, and you'd hear them in your earbuds getting closer at a certain point every time. I mean, it's not like a super smart app, but still crazy cool. So let's say it was about the sixth song in my playlist where I'm on the run from zombies. This is super trippy. One night I was running around in our neighborhood, and this guy comes walking in between two houses. Of course, it's late at night, and I'm running from zombies. And I had to look at that guy and say, okay, that's not a zombie. It's a human being. But he's coming at me quick. What if? And he went to his car, and I'm like, calm down, Chris. So this is getting deep in my psyche, if you will. So I'm in my kitchen one night, and I'm working. Everybody's asleep. I've got the lights on. It's quiet. It's warm. And I have the playlist that I run to playing in my earbuds. That song comes on where the zombies would usually be chasing me. And it was one of the weirdest things. It was crazy. And I wish I could show you somehow through the podcast, but I'm sitting there typing and that song comes on, and instinctively and reflexively, I turn back and I look over my shoulder. Isn't that crazy? I mean, number one, I'm in a safe, clean, warm house. Doors are locked. Number two, it's not real. But yet, it felt real. Now, here's what I want you to get, because everything is essential on understanding. You can't reframe everything until you know there is a narrative of fear that you have bought into. It keeps you from being fully engaged in your leadership. Your work isn't the true reflection of who you are. It's not the unobstructive creative expression, like I heard one author say, of who you are, because fear blocks it. Understand your fear. You unblock everything. Multiple leaders and business voices and sages throughout time have been saying this. Understanding fear is everything. And so real quick, we want to dive into that. We want to learn that narrative. We want to learn how you've been triggered to be afraid. I built a trigger of fear with a song, and I didn't even intentionally try to do it. It just happened. And so throughout your life, some big things have happened and lots of little small things, and all of them have reinforced a response of fear. Now, so what I want to do real quick with you is talk you through these fears. If you want to see what these look like, we'll try to make these available in some way. You can walk through them. You can take notes as I walk through these. There are 9 fears that we walk you through in Sight Shift Lead to help you get blazing clarity on who you are and what's happening. Now, if you've walked through the Sight Shift Lead guide, we talk about 9 fears that block full engagement. I'm going to use a little bit of different language now because I can do this in an audio way and go deeper with you. And this is what we walk people that are in the coaching program through. So here it is. The first fear is, if I'm not needed, then I'm not loved. If I'm not needed, then I'm not loved. Now, before you go, where is this headed? I want you to think about it this way. There are people right now that are making horrible relationship decisions. They're making awful business and leadership decisions because they're trying to keep people connected to them, because if they don't need me, then where do I fit in? Fear is energizing their life. We know fear energizes so much of what happens around us. It's easier to raise money for politics through fear. It's easier to raise money in religion through fear. It's easier to get people spiked and frenetic on fear than it is to help them live from a true core of hope and love. And this isn't squishy and in a way that you're not going to be able to connect it to your everyday life, so hang with me. But I want you to know that if this is the fear that is driving you, you are going to try to hide or prove in some way. I'm going to walk all these fears through hiding or proving. The way to recognize an insecure identity, and identity is everything, is when you prove or you hide. You can't see it right now, but my long flowing locks of hair. No, I'm bald, but I have a beard. You know why? Because I'm proving that I can do it on my face, even if I can't do it up top. We prove and hide every day. I promise you, as you learn to recognize this in your life, you're going to learn how to cooperate with a process of change, how you can cooperate with how your life changes, not fight against it. As you learn to process your life along the lines of identity, you're cooperating with how your life changes. And how do you get to that? By understanding fear. Right now, there are people around you that you can think of. They're trying to prove something to you. They're trying to prove something in the boardroom. They're trying to prove something at home. And it's because they don't feel secure about that. They don't feel like it's true. People want to say pride is a problem. Pride isn't the problem. Fear is. Have you ever met a secure, narcissistic person? I haven't. They're trying to prove something because they don't believe it's true. And then some people are hiding. They're diminishing who they are. They're diminishing the contribution they can bring to that objective at work. They're diminishing the weight of who they are to their relationship. And we all prove and hide in some way every day. Hopefully, as you work through this, you'll do less of it. But the first fear is, if I'm not needed, then I'm not loved. And so if you believe that you're not needed, you won't be loved, you're going to prove to people how they need you. And then you're going to push them away, right? That insecurity is going to push away the very advancement you want at work, the very relationship that you want to flourish. Fear number 2, if I don't take care of myself, no one else will. This is when you feel like it's all on your shoulders. There's no place where you can let down and rest and know you're taken care of. If this is the fear that dominates your horizon, your filter, if this is how you are approaching life, if this is what is giving you energy, then what happens is you're never going to come to this place where you actually feel joy, because you feel abandoned and alone. Now, again, all of these things have happened. Our life has triggered our brain to believe these things. And we'll talk some about brain later. But for now, let me just say this. Whatever you've been through that's told you this, it's not true. What we want to learn to do to cooperate with the process of how our life changes is find that abundant security within. It's not a scarcity of, if I don't take care of myself, no one else will. There's an abundance where you learn to tap into that on the inside. Oh, I can relax because, yes, I will be taken care of. You still got to go out and work and make things happen? Absolutely. You can't kick your feet up and say, I'm going to be taken care of. I don't have to apply myself. No, internally, when you know your identity is taken care of, then externally, you can apply all the mission, all the energy you need to your mission and to your community. So I'm talking about identity. You aren't responsible to meet every need on the inside of who you are. All the love that you need, all the acceptance, all the celebration. We want to learn to tap into that. I'm going to teach you some things on how to do that and how to position your brain for that. For now, we just want to get clear, real clear on the fears. Fear three, I don't belong anywhere. So if this is your fear that you don't belong anywhere, you're constantly looking for a place to call home. You're constantly hoping that this will be the relationship that I can be fully known for who I am, that I can call home. People that are being driven by this fear, they're always trying to get peace by kicking their problems down the road. They don't have the energy to solve their problems because they've bought into this lie that peace is the absence of problems. Peace isn't the absence of problems. It's having the energy to address and solve what is there in front of you. And people that are wondering, do I belong anywhere? Do not have peace. And so they're constantly ignoring their problems. Look, this is the person that's real needy at work, and they're trying to get these constant assurances that they're seen and known for who they are. They're proving it. Or they're hiding. They're the wallflower. They're not bringing the full weight of what they can bring to that new initiative, or they're not engaging that relationship with a whole heart. When we fear that we don't belong anywhere, the narrative that we've tapped into is that in our identity, we don't have home. And again, we want to flip this, but for now, I just want to help you learn to recognize where you're proving or hiding. Fear number four, I don't have what it takes. I don't have what it takes. Remember I said these fears, they come into our lives, whether it's through 1,000 little things or a few big things or a combination of both. And it's really trippy. I mean, when you get insight on this, as we walk through these nine, you'll learn, oh, that's why that's my favorite movie, or that's why I love those songs, because there is a narrative that you're attracted to, you're drawn to. I can think of people that I've worked with that, you know, grew up being bullied and then wanted to be a policeman so that they could protect others, right? And that's a good thing. They're trying to give. And then others that are policemen because they grew up being bullied because they bully others. And they're trying to get power. They're trying to get something. And it's just a fear. It's fear is driving them. So if you're afraid that you don't have what it takes, so many guys I've talked to especially struggle with this one. You're fixing the car with dad and he pushes you out of the way. He says, that's easy. I'll do it. And that little exchange has a big implication because children are great recorders, but terrible interpreters. They record all that information and they interpret it in a terrible way. And the interpretation that you bring to it, your false narrative, the way the music triggers the fear of zombies for you is that you fear you don't have what it takes. And so here's what happens. You'll only focus your energy into the spaces in life where you know you can kill it. And you'll hyper-specialize in one area. But yet, in other areas of your life, you're afraid of failing, so you don't engage. Maybe you kill it at work, but you're floundering at home. What do you need? You need an internal secure identity where there's patience, where you know you can take the skills that you developed in where you killed it at work and build a bridge to those skills and really be an awesome dad and husband. Really be an incredible wife and mother. However that works for you, it's different for everybody. But that fear that I don't have what it takes, that I'm not going to be enough, that I'm going to be found out to be insufficient, that I'm going to be inadequate, it's hanging around all our necks. And I'm going to tell you about why it's hanging around so deeply in a minute. But for now, I want to walk through these fears. Fear number five, I can't perform well enough to feel worthy. I can't perform well enough to feel worthy. You know, if this is your fear, you're constantly waking up in the morning and the scoreboard is negative And no matter what you do, no matter what you achieve, no matter what you accomplish, you cannot move the needle enough that you wake up the next day and you feel abundance. You feel worthy apart from your performance. If you don't feel worthy apart from your performance, you're either going to hide and not attempt things so that you can't fail and lose worth, or you're going to constantly try to prove yourself to others and you're going to wear everybody out. You're also going to kill yourself. You're going to work yourself to death because I have to have more success and achievement. What are you doing? You're shifting into second gear. You're defining your life by mission, or you define it by the quality of relationships that you have. And that, what do you need on the inside? You need to understand that you can be kind. You can be kind to yourself. You don't have to drive yourself. You're not a taskmaster to yourself. You don't have to earn that worth anymore. The next fear, fear six, I am bad. I am bad. I mean, it's hard to, I know for some of you to shift gears and to get introspective and track on this, but I'm telling you that some of you are getting results in your life and it's self-fulfilling prophecy, right? It's self-sabotaging behavior because you're like, yep, that's what I get because I'm bad. Why would you believe you're bad? Oftentimes, people that have been through any kind of abuse believe they're bad. It's the only way they can reconcile in their brains that somebody that loved me and should have protected me did something awful to me. And so you start to believe a lie that it's your fault. It's not your fault. But you believed it was your fault so that you could make peace in your mind with how could this person who should have been taking care of me do this to me? And so then you grow up and you start to approach life. This shapes the narrative. I'm bad, therefore I'm going to get bad things happening to me, or I'm going to just settle. When this fear is what's driving you and you're not able to tap into that internal goodness, the security of your identity, every time you are in a space where something bad happens to you, you're processing your life, mission, community, you're forgetting about identity. We want to learn to pay attention to identity. No more proving or hiding. Fear number seven, if I mess up, the worst will happen. So the fear here is that I've got to keep everything spinning. If this is your fear, there's a fear that the earth is going to come out from underneath you at any given moment. There's no secure ground. There's a real hardcore struggle with anxiety, always waiting on the shoe to drop. And so sometimes what you'll do to hide is you'll hide behind some kind of maybe religious thinking or thinking in your life, even in your leadership, that says, if I do this and I do this, I'll get this result. I can master things. A plus B equals C. And you'll be deeply attached to, I've got to have this outcome to feel whole. When you process your life along the lines of identity, and you understand that you're always internally secure, even if you're externally threatened, then you do not have to live in this space that says, if I mess up, the worst will happen. Life becomes a playground. You know you're going to make mistakes. You can embrace the idea of failure. That's the only way you're going to get to the edge of your abilities and grow. So you may feel like in the moment you fail as a mom, you may feel like you fail at that initiative at work, but you're learning how to put yourself out there and make these small bets to get big wins as you grow. If you're in a space where this fear is dominating you, then it shuts your life down. And you either try to prove it by how, aggressive you are with managing all the components and the variables, and you really become superstitious, or you start to despair and give up. Fear number eight, if I'm vulnerable, I'll be hurt. This is crazy. I mean, I can go into a boardroom and be around a group of people and be around a team of executives, and it doesn't matter, male, female, all the mixes, whatever. It's guys and gals. It's all of us. There are people that at some point in life, somebody powerful hurt them. And because of that, they are not going to be vulnerable. And because they're not going to be vulnerable, they're either going to hide and not bring who they are, or they're going to prove, and they're going to power up and be aggressive and push others away. I have seen people ruin their businesses. I've seen people ruin relationships that they value because every time you start to get close to this person, they flare up. They pick a fight. Why? Because I'm going to push you away. You're not going to hurt me. What's happening here? There needs to be an internal awareness of their identity so that they can learn gentleness. They can learn that, yeah, some people are going to hurt you. and you can be wise and you can be intentional about the way you develop relationships, and you can develop relationships that are based on a sense of wholeness and people that are going to be safe. Not everybody should be a confidant. At the same time, you can bring full engagement to your mission and your community because you understand that no external relational pain defines you on the inside. And this last fear, number 9, I'm nothing special. If we believe that we're nothing special and we're constantly on a quest to try to figure out what's my uniqueness, what happens is that fear begins to really go deep, and it's almost subterranean. We feel the angst of that. We feel replaceable. We feel like we're just one of 7 billion. Or maybe we're in a relationship where we're afraid of being replaced. Or maybe at work, we're even told that directly. Hey, you could be easily replaced. We learn to comfort that pain through destructive habits that we binge on. We hide them away. We don't think anybody knows about it. We go into the basement of our lives, but they're there. And we haven't learned yet how to marshal our energies into making our unique mark. And so we hide with these habits. Or maybe we prove, and we're going to prove, you're not, I'm not easily replaceable. And we may not ever say that, but we operate that way. And we end up pushing away people. Again, proving and hiding. It all comes down to that. So no more proving and hiding. Now, I want to talk to you about where proving and hiding comes from, and I want to get you thinking about this and give you some exercises to process it. And I just want to tell you a few stories to help this really sink in. I can remember when my kids were younger, and they would ask for something to drink, and it was one of these spaces where they're at that edge of being able to do it for themselves, but they're not quite yet there. I did this fun thing with them when they were old enough to start getting their own. I'd say, if you're old enough to get your water, and they'd all go, holla, make it fun, and they'd go get their water. But right at that age where they weren't quite old enough to do it for themselves and they were asking for it, what if one of my daughters came up to me and said, hey, Daddy, could you fill up my sippy cup? And I said to her, I can't wait till you're old enough to fill up your own sippy cup. What does she hear? Children are great recorders, terrible interpreters. My needs are a problem. And then she's 24, being overworked by her boss, and she can't go in and explain what she needs because she believes her needs are a problem. I'm telling you, in 1,000 little ways, in a few big ways, this fear, this narrative has been ingrained into you. And if you go through these, some of you may feel the weight of all 9 of them. The more time you spend reflecting on it, you will find a few of them start to really become clear. Maybe some of you already had that experience. Spend time with this, introspect, wrestle, think, because eventually you're going to get really deep clarity on what that one is for you. And you're going to learn how to recognize proving and hiding in the small moments. And so for me, it's just learning to recognize that. And I had a big insight one day. I'd come home, and I talked about this in the first podcast, but it was a season of struggle. You know, I had gone from leading an organization with a number of employees. I think it was like 30 full-time at one point, to a startup kind of solo entrepreneur thing. And it was a turnaround effort on a nonprofit, and had a couple of team members, but it was really, really tough. And we really were scraping bottom. And so I was just trying to get grocery money every day, just trying to make it. And I come in the house, and my wife, she's super passionate about moving the house forward. And she was just saying, hey, we need to get some paint on this wall. She knew the struggle I was in. She wasn't saying it needed to happen right then. She was just saying, hey, off in the future, does this matter to you? I want to make sure you care. Simple. I should have been able to just affirm her and say, yeah, we need to take care of that. Instead, here's what I heard her say. She didn't say this. This is what I hear on the inside, because I'm paying attention to identity first gear. You suck as a husband. Can't you get your stuff together? Why do I even have to bring this up? I wish I wasn't even married to you. What was I doing? I was hearing her according to the narrative of fear. For me, the struggle is, if I'm not performing well, I'm not worthy. So I wasn't performing well in my mind, therefore I wasn't worthy. Therefore I'm relating out of insecurity, and I'm blocking up my ability to give her what she needs because I'm trying to get something from her. And it was almost World War III because I'm ready to prove, look at all I'm trying to do to keep things going, right? Which is going to fire off her fears. And now missiles are crossing and we're not even fighting about the wall. This isn't about that. It's about the insecurity of our identity. Another time that I really learned to recognize this was I was doing some dishes, and just the rhythm of our house and what it takes to move things forward really had come to this awareness that I got to step up in my role at home. And so I'm helping and I'm getting some things taken care of. And I don't know if you've seen the Seinfeld episode where George Costanza puts money in the tip jar and they don't see it. And so he's got to do it again so they see it and they think he's taking money out because, you know, if you don't get the credit for it, why do it? I'm doing the dishes and I'm like, hey, she's not noticing that I'm doing this. Why am I doing this? Of course, the trick is you start clanking the dishes and then, hey, thanks, honey. Oh, you noticed. Okay, cool. No problem. But I recognized in that small moment, I wasn't doing this to help. I was doing this to get something. Why? The fear. The fear makes such a deep mark on us. You will never be the leader that you can be until you understand your fear. Now, why is that fear there? I want to tell you just a way of framing this to get you to think about this big idea, and we'll close down after this. But it's understanding the difference between guilt and shame. Guilt's when you feel bad about what you've done. Shame is when you feel bad about who you are. This is essential to understand this difference. And there's a story that that I'll tell my coaching clients because I want them to get this so deeply. And it's a relevant story to a number of faith traditions. You may or may not be religious. Either way, I think you'll be familiar with the story of Adam and Eve. Now hang tight here, okay? Regardless of what you believe about the story, I want you to think about this. In the story of Adam and Eve, it's recorded for us that they were naked and felt no shame. Now, this isn't about physical nudity. This is about a space that you're in where you never feel bad about who you are. None of these fears are present. You never feel shame. You feel alive, celebrated. You feel congruence. Your mission is the overflow of who you are. Your community is healthy and beautiful and celebrates you. There's no interaction of fear, okay? Shame is what communicates a lie to you about who you are. Fear is how you feel the lie. Now, I'm going to be taking you to freedom over the course of this podcast so that you can learn the truth of who you are, to feel, see, and hear that you're loved, to draw from that abundant identity within. But fear and shame are the keys to unlocking all this. Fear is where you feel the lie of shame. And it's recorded for us in a story, an ancient story to multiple faith traditions, that the height of human existence was a feeling of no shame. We discount feelings too much. I mean, our bodies are trying to constantly communicate to us. Our body stores feelings. Our brains are being shaped by what we feel. The more intensely we feel it, the more the wiring of our brain is happening. Our brains are constantly being rewired according to what we feel. This is why the modern quest to numb out, to divorce yourself from your body, to divorce yourself from your feelings, capture so much of our time and attention and energy, because we just don't want to feel the shame. And a story that's been valuable to a number of faith traditions, an ancient story, helps us understand what it's like to go from the height of human existence, a feeling of no shame, to where they actually do succumb to this shame. And what do Adam and Eve do? They hide. I don't know what you think about, if you think about God or how that works for you, but I can tell you that for most people, they've made some kind of internal image in their mind's eye or in their heart or however you want to think about it, in the image of their own shame. And Adam and Eve went and hid. Why? Because the shame was engulfing them. And then they get into an exchange and they're trying to prove it's her fault. You know, this is why this happened, and the blaming. This week, here's what I want you to do. I want you just to pay attention. Pay attention to what it's like for you to interact with others, for you to interact with your work. Just notice at least one moment of proving and hiding. Notice one moment of fear. For those of you that want to go even deeper with it, walk back through these fears. Listen back through that. Take some notes. And the more you get into this, the more you recognize when you're proving and hiding, you're going to be able to tap into how to flip that. And we're going to get deeper into that later. Hey, for now, thanks for being here. We want to help give you insight on your leadership, and just keep staying with this. There's lots more insight to come. Peace.
This has been The Site Shift, Lead Podcast with Chris McAllister. Thank you for listening.